Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Barry Trammell, here to discuss the Thunder's 112-102 loss to the San Antonio Spurs on Tuesday night at Chesapeake Energy Arena. The Thunder falls to 5-5. I thought this was kind of a ho-hum game. The Spurs were playing without DeMar DeRozan. You know, it's Spurs Thunder, not the most exciting basketball being played. But it was, you know, a competitive game. The fourth quarter was close. The Thunder never cut it to within 4 points, though, in the fourth quarter. Had a late steal. Baisley had a chance to make a three to cut it to 3 points. That didn't go in. But really, Barry, the story of this game was turnovers. 26-2, the Spurs outscored the Thunder in points off turnovers. The Thunder turned it over 13 times, not like an outrageous number, but San Antonio only turned it over 4 times. And to just see a 24-point margin in turnovers is nuts.
And two of the San Antonio turnovers were LaMarcus Aldridge offensive fouls. So,
yeah,
there was not a whole lot of serious ball pressure put on the Spurs. And, you know, Mark Daigneault after the game explained that their defense is not high pressure oriented. They want to pack the paint. To me, what was interesting, though, is a couple of those guys, particularly Keldon Johnson, a Kentucky man who, frankly, I'd never even heard of until, you know, in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he's having like a breakout sophomore season.
Yeah, I mean, he kept going to the basket like he was, I don't know, you know, some of the great drivers in NBA history. So it was not a stellar defensive night for the Thunder. I asked Mark Daigneault, you know, if the other team has 4 turnovers, I know you don't try to force turnovers. I know San Antonio doesn't commit turnovers, but 4 is ridiculous. So is that you got any culpability? And he said, yeah, that's partly on us. It's hard to win when you got that big of a discrepancy in turnovers and points off turnovers.
Exactly. I mean, that was the story of the game. There's really not even a second way to break down this Thunder's loss. You mentioned Johnson. Really like his game. He played 39 minutes tonight. Again, the Spurs were playing without DeMar DeRozan, so their starting lineup was Keldon Johnson, Trey Lyles, LaMarcus Aldridge, Lonnie Walker, and DeJounte Murray. Keldon Johnson was 6 of 11. He had 18 points. Lonnie Walker led the Spurs with 24. Murray had 16. Aldridge had 13. The Spurs played well, even being a little shorthanded. They've also dealt with some COVID protocol issues. For the Thunder, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander led them with 20 points. I thought he had a fantastic first half. He was 5 of 6. He had 12 points. All 5 of his makes were in the restricted area. So Shai was not taking the 3. I don't even think he attempted a 3 tonight, but he did a great job of getting to the rim. And then in the second half, he only finished with 10 total shots. He went 7 of 10. He scored 8 points in the second half. I asked Daigneault about, you know, would you like that number to be higher? He made a great point that Shai did attempt 9 free throws. But it just looked so easy for Shai in the first half. I thought that was going to continue more in the second half. But what did you make the way he played?
Yeah, he seemed to be looking for his shot early and not so much late.
Because Walker, they couldn't defend Walker, but Walker was not defending him well at all.
Right. So, by the way, we'll get to the point in a minute, but I miss Lonnie Walker's hair because you could pick him out. You know, I chart the games when I cover. Even when I'm watching on TV, I chart the games. And, you know, some of these teams, like Spurs, have a bunch of younger guys that not well-known in the league, and I'm just learning them. And Lonnie Walker's hair last year, heck, that was easy to spot. I really enjoyed having somebody like him out there, and now he looks like everybody else. So
just like Elfrid Payton, you know, he lost his
hair. Elfrid Payton, it's two out of the last 3 games, some of the best hair in the NBA or the most distinctive hair in the NBA has been wasted. So, but anyway, yeah, I don't know, Shai. You know, Shai committed several turnovers himself. I forgot the number. But I thought he was maybe a little overpassing some tonight. Let's see. He had we only had 2 turnovers. So, you know, I'll give him some slack on that.
Only 2 assists as well.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, that generally is not a good game for him when he's only got that, you know, that, that few assists. So, but he was scoring at ease. You know what's interesting to me? And I saw a little bit more of it in Brooklyn, but early in the season, he's not shooting nearly the amount of mid-range shots that he shot last year. I don't know, did the analytics police get a hold of him? But to me, that's interesting. Of course, the shot Thunder in general shooting more threes, not necessarily tonight.
No.
But yeah, for the season, the Thunder is shooting a lot more threes than last year. Tonight, only 26 threes. Spurs shot 35, which would have been sacrilege before this season. So, yeah, you know, so I just I'm intrigued by that. But I thought he was a little bit overpassing. You know, that one play he made, he literally jumped up and under the basket with the ball and didn't know what to do. And so he just bounced the ball on the ground, and turns out, who was it? Somebody came up with it, Baisley or somebody came up with it. But I thought he was a little overpassing tonight.
Yeah, I like when he's driving. He's so fun to watch with the way he gets to the rim. Sometimes it looks like he's gliding in slow motion. Then he can burst by a guy. He's, you know, he's moving in all sorts of different directions. Like he's so tough to defend, so herky-jerky near the rim. And we've obviously seen the scoop shots. We've seen the floaters. We've seen the finger rolls, all sorts of different finishes. So when he's got that working, he's really good, but still finished with 20 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists. The Thunder really, you know, you talked about the three-point attempts, 26 tonight. They came into the game averaging 40.4, and that's third in the league. I was sort of wondering, is it small sample? Is it, you know, they've played the Pelicans twice, and the Pelicans allow a ton of threes. Were the Spurs shutting that down tonight? And Daigneault said, just what the game gave us tonight, we're not going to preemptively dictate what shots we shoot or from where. So I don't know if that means that the Thunder's – I doubt they finished attempting 43-pointers per game. That would put them on an unprecedented level for the franchise's history, but it could very well happen. But tonight was like the opposite. The Thunder usually gets destroyed in the paint. Tonight they outscored the Spurs 50-36 in the paint. I know, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge isn't that bruising paint presence. He's more of a mid-range guy, but three-pointers went down tonight. Points in the paint went up.
Yeah. I thought the Thunder bench was not as good as it was, you know, the last part of that road trip where they were really good.
But Diallo.
Yeah, Diallo. Well, Diallo has been removed from the 23 Hall of Fame. Two straight games of 23. What did he finish with? Just 18 tonight, I think. But think about that. Think about that. This guy now in the last three games averaging 21 points, for crying out loud. So he's turning into a quality sixth man is what he's doing. I mean, a serious sixth man. Here's what I was intrigued by, St. Joe. You tell me what you think. I forgot to write down the time, but it's 4 or 5 minutes left in the game, tight game, you know, 3 to 5 points, something like that. And Mark Daigneault goes back to his starting lineup, and he takes Diallo out. And I wondered at some point, will Diallo make the closing lineup? I don't know. You know, I don't know if you don't want to take out Dort, you don't want to take out Hill, you don't, maybe Baisley at some point. I don't know. But to me, that's interesting. At some point, I'm anxious to see if Diallo can crack not the starting lineup, but the finishing lineup.
It is interesting. As long as Hill is still on the roster, I wouldn't think he would, because we can talk about Dort's three-point shooting. It was great again tonight. But if you have Dort and Diallo on the floor at the same time, I don't know about that fit. I would question their shot-making ability. Diallo is certainly good at, like, being the guy when he's out there, being out there with, like, Pokuševski and Maladone, Kenrich Williams. He can just go guns blazing straight to the rim. I don't know sort of how he fits with the starters. That's a group we frankly haven't seen all that much, if at all. But, you know, when they're down like they were between, you know, 4 to 8 points tonight, I think his him being a total non-factor three-point shooter probably keeps him out of it.
Yeah, you're right. It's not a great fit. You know, as you were talking, I thought, what if they trade George Hill? Does that mean Dort is the shooting guard and Diallo starts at small forward? It's certainly not a spread the floor lineup anymore. It's certainly not a five out. But it would still be a four out to some degree. So, you know, to me, that would be an interesting concept. Diallo gives him some options. What I like about the guy is it's pretty clear something has blossomed. Now, I'm not saying he's going to stay this productive, but he clearly has you know, discovered some sort of situation that he thinks he's really a ball player, and he seems to be proving it.
You know, I'm slowly buying in, I guess, to this improvement. He's clearly I'm not buying into him being a 15 points per night guy, but I'm definitely buying into the improvement that he's made from last year. His shot selection is so much better. Now, sometimes he'll settle for like a mid-range pull-up, and those almost never go well. Sometimes he'll take a three-pointer when he has to, and I understand that. But like when he just gets to the rim, and he like blows by guys even in the half court. It's not just on fast breaks when he's pushing in transition. It's like I'd have to look at his numbers around the rim. I would guess that he's shooting an insanely good number. But if he could sort of take out those bad shots and expand his playmaking abilities a little bit, becoming a drive and kick guy when he needs to, I think there's something there. Like, this is someone we've never talked about as being in the Thunder's long-term plans. I still don't know the answer to that question. I mean, what do you think? Like, he's in the year of his contract.
I think Hamidou Diallo is at least on the list. I don't think he necessarily ranks as high as Baisley and Dort. But you know what? I think you'd have to say that the way he's playing, he's showing that he's somebody to keep an eye on. That runner in the lane is pretty dang good. And his energy, I think he's a guy that the Thunder – would like to see more of. I know the contract situation, I don't know. That's a big mess. But golly, if Lou Dort only got 1.4 million or 1. Whatever it was last year for 3 or 4 years, I don't know why Hamidou Diallo would get much more than that. So he might be a guy you could sign for another 3 or 4 years at a minimal level. And that would be ideal in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's starting to remember Diallo was a second round pick. So they hit on Dort. I mean, definitely hit on Dort. He was an undrafted guy and he's turned into a really productive starter. And then Diallo is a second round pick, slowly came along, didn't look like there was much there. And now he's proven differently in year three. And if nothing else, even if his future's not with the Thunder, like, there's clearly a place in the NBA for Hamidou Diallo, and I don't know if, you know, anyone quite knew the answer to that question coming into the season, but just his sheer energy and speed and the force in which he plays will keep him on the floor. And, like, he's fun to watch. Like, that baseline cut he made when Shea fed him and he finished the dunk, like, he finishes with some authority. Like, he's definitely one of the more fun guys to watch on this team.
Yeah, and – you know, what I like about him is even when he was not, you know, Lou Williams' scoring machine coming off the bench, he brought energy. I don't know that he's a very good defender, but things sort of happen when he's out there. There's deflections and there's stuff going on. So you can –
yeah,
you look around the league, there's all kinds of good players that really aren't very good shooters. And, you know, this kid tonight for San Antonio, Keldon Johnson, I don't know anything about him. He looks like he wouldn't take an 18-foot shot under threat of bayonet. But, golly, he's turning himself into a good NBA player. So I don't know why. I don't know why Kamadou couldn't do the same thing.
A lot of Kentucky guys with some similarities in that sense.
Now, let me ask you, were you – you weren't in Kentucky when Keldon Johnson was there, were you?
No, he was the year after I left.
Okay.
Yeah, so the
Did you cover SGA and Hamadou?
I did, yeah. So the first Kentucky team I covered was really good. It was Fox, Monk, and Adebayo. And then the next year, the big three on that team were Shea, Kevin Knox, PJ Washington, and then Diallo was really kind of an afterthought. Him and Cal sort of clashed a little bit, but it's worked out well for Hamadou.
Yeah, well, he's been a find in the last 2 weeks, 1 week, 2 weeks, ever how far you want to say. So I'm very encouraged by that. The one thing, forget the record, which is crazy good compared to what we thought they'd be. But one thing you can say through 10 or 11 games or how many it is, Bazley's looks like he did in the bubble. Dort is better than he was in the bubble. And Hamadou has come along. So, you know, to me, it's a little bit encouraging. It's a little bit encouraging. Of course, you're supposed to improve in your second year. And frankly, Hamadou hasn't played enough to, you know, even sort of count having played 2 years before now. So, to me, it's a good revelation what they've sort of come up with.
Dort shot 3 of 6 from three tonight. It's another of those things. At what point do you buy in? He's now up to 44% from three on the season. What's a fair marking point for Dort? Like if he's shooting like 38% by the halfway point, I think that would be incredible, right? Like,
yeah. Now here's what to me is going to be the key. I think defense is still.
Yeah. When they start guarding him,
they still don't believe it. They still don't believe it.
Yeah.
You know, there's lies, there's damn lies, and then there's statistics. And they're saying, no, look, I'm not buying it. If we get to February and he's shooting 40%, they're going to start buying it, and he's not going to get 5 open threes a game. He's going to have to shoot threes sort of the way SGA shoots them, either through incredible ball movement once or twice a game or deeper. You know, one thing about Dort, he never shoots a deep three. He's always right on the line. So –
and strictly catch and shoot.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see if that holds up. We'll see if it holds up, and if it does hold up, will it continue to hold up when the defenses wave the white flag and say, okay, you're the second coming of Steph Curry?
Well, and then he's got to – that will lead to, you know, a natural step in his game. If they do run out of him, then he's going to have to put the ball on the floor and see what he can do from there. But he hasn't been able to do that yet. He has all the time in the world, by the way, to get that shot off. It's not a particularly quick release. It is a very high arcing shot, and sometimes it splashes in and sometimes it almost misses everything. But like can't argue against the numbers yet. It's been something to see. What did you think of the rookies tonight? 15 minutes for Maladone, 16 for Poku. You know, not huge stat lines for either one, but a lot of playing time for both of them.
Yeah, I didn't think Maladone had a very impactful game. I liked Poku, though. I think he's been undersold as a rim protector. I'm serious. I think the guy can you know, do some damage. He had 2 blocks tonight. I think he could block some shots in this league.
Speaking of rim protection, someone's got to update him on the rules of the NBA.
Yeah.
But it's not Europe where you can't knock it off the cylinder.
Okay. Having watched the NBA for 12 years up close and personal, and getting to see Poku play in 8 or 9 NBA games and seeing how the Euros play, I have to say I like the Euro game better. Isn't that fun? Being able to get up there and whack the ball out of the rim. I think that would make basketball more exciting. I really do.
And I thought, you know, he's going to commit so many turnovers, so many walking violations. It's crazy. But his shot was better tonight. Let's see. He was 2 of 6. He banked in an 18-footer from straight away. I'm not convinced it was luck. He might have meant to do it because he actually jumped pretty good on that shot. It's almost like he was shooting down at the basket on an 18-footer. And if you do that, then shooting a bank shot makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, it's easier.
Yeah, I would – so investigate. We need to find out, was that a called bank shot or an intentional bank shot? I would like to know. That to me would be interesting.
That would be interesting because I think the sample with him is too small. We've hardly seen this guy still, you know, even through 10 games. We don't know the intricacies of his game, his shot selection. And he's banked a couple, so I actually don't know if it's intentional or not. Every time in the NBA you see a guy bank a shot, you're like, well, that was lucky. But with him, who knows? He is going to commit a ton of traveling violations. It's the classic thing of, you know, he catches the ball and starts moving before he puts the ball on the floor, and he gets whistled for that. But, you know, Daigneault opened up his rotations again tonight. Justin Jackson played a little bit. Kenrich Williams, he only played 3 minutes. Isaiah Roby played 14 minutes. We've basically seen Roby in a center-only role, you know, as the backup to Horford when Muscala's out, as the backup to Muscala if Horford's out. But tonight he played a lot on the floor with Muscala, and I continue to believe that Roby's helping them a little bit, and he's also a good story as well.
He's not a bad player. He's not a bad player. You know, he banged his finger or something. I don't know what he did tonight, but
yeah.
You know, to me, he's a sort of good – I can see why now. I spent 14 months trying to figure out, why'd Sam Presti do that deal? Just get a guy who had a guaranteed contract. That seems idiotic. But now you can sort of see the guy can play some. And he's not the kind of guy who's really going to be a big factor on a team like the Thunder. He's actually a guy that would have helped Thunder teams of the past. You know, when especially in injuries come along, if he's your I may have said this in the pod the other night, but if he's your backup power forward, well, or your backup center, but if he's your third teamer, well, that's not bad. If, you know, if somebody's out and he needs to play 14 minutes, that can work out. So, I've been impressed.
Barry, I know you're writing a column about home court, home field, home whatever advantage being dead in sports. The Thunder, or you don't have to even try hard on this. The Thunder is 5-1 on the road, 0-4 at home. It's your classic example.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is on that. It's, to me, we've often wondered why. We know there's a home field advantage, a home court advantage, basketball more than any sport, but all of them, really. Baseball, you have a strategic advantage, getting to bat last, but and build a team around a non-conventional stadium. I mean, everybody has different.
Yeah.
But the question becomes, what exactly is the advantage? And I think we're seeing that fans in the stands – is an advantage, and it is something. Now, what they provide is an energy, probably. Is it intimidation of the officials? Probably. Lots of things going on that probably contribute to that, but it's clear that fans make a difference.
Yeah, and, you know, this wasn't the case tonight necessarily, but another reason you might see away teams outperform, you know, even aside from there being no fans, is the way that the NBA has set up scheduling this year, where, you know, like you're in New York for a few nights, you're, you know, there's more of those baseball type series where a team might stay 3 days and play two games in 3 days. So the rest obviously helps a lot, but I will say being in the arena tonight and throughout the season, and Oklahoma City still having no fans, like it does get a little sleepy in there. It's just like you've got the music going and everything like that. The piped in crowd noise, you forget it's even there. It's just like, I don't know. I'm not saying it negatively affects the home team more than the road team, but it just is, it just has a different feel. And I'm not sure. I don't know. A lot of people are connecting it to why we've seen so many blowouts. There's been more blowouts this season than any other season, basically through the early goings. And maybe you don't have the crowd sort of willing a team back into it. I think that like makes sense if the numbers back it up.
No. Yeah, I think you're right. On the NBA level, don't undersell the travel. The travel is not as bad as it has been. So
that's why was so good in the bubble. Like no one was right, traveling and everyone played great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's undersold. But the NFL, same way, and that travel wasn't any big different. College football, college basketball hasn't undergone travel changes. So to me, that's all interesting. And I just don't know if this will be sustained, but I tend to think it will be with no fans.
Anything else to add on this game before I want to get to another topic?
No, probably not. You're right. It's sort of a mundane game, a little bit sad to me. Thunder Spurs has been such a glorious rivalry for a decade. Two mediocre teams. I mean, Thunder's trying to be less than mediocre. Spurs would like to be less than mediocre, but both of them have such good cultures and such winning DNA that sometimes it's impossible for them to play too bad. But, you know, for those of us who remember Durant, Westbrook and Harden and Parker and Ginobili and Tim Duncan, it wasn't quite even, you know, even Donald Sutherland has changed his hairdo over there on the Spurs bench. So, you know, I just can't, it's hard to get into the Thunder Spurs revelry with this in this era when both teams are likely to miss the playoffs.
Yeah. Want to move on and finish with this because, it's the big issue today. The NBA and the National Basketball Players Association announced new COVID-19 protocols, basically just stricter across the board, stricter mask usage, not having any visitors in hotels. There were team-approved, league-approved restaurants you could go to on the road. You can no longer do that. And essentially, players have and staff have stay at home orders. That's what it boils down to. If you remember back to then, you basically for the next 2 weeks can only have interaction with people in your household. You're not supposed to leave your home except for essential activities such as grocery shopping, things like that, if you have to go to a doctor's appointment. So you know, I'm working on a story about that, wanted to get all of the Thunder players' takes on it. And George Hill, 13-year veteran, he really pushed back against the new changes. And I just, I know if we had more time, could probably lay in the audio, but I want to just read what he said. When asked about the new protocols, he said, "I'm a grown man, so I'm going to do what I want to do. If I want to go see my family, I'm going to see my family. They can't tell me I have to stay in the room 24/7. If it's that serious, then maybe we shouldn't be playing. It's life. No one's going to be able to just cancel their whole life for this game. That's how I think about it." After a follow-up, he said, "We want to play the game. That's what we love to do. But at the same time, if we're casting all these rules, this and that, maybe they need to reevaluate what we're doing. If it's that serious where you're telling guys they can't leave a room. I just don't understand some of the rules as far as we can sweat 48 minutes with the guy next to us and the team next to us, but we can't talk to him after the game. It makes no sense." I think there are several valid points Hill brought up. I think it's definitely fair to question whether or not they should be playing, but I just wanted to get your reaction to what George Hill said.
Well, I was fascinated when he said it, and I thought several things. I'll tell you in a minute some of them. But then contrast that with SGA and Hamidou Diallo, who a few minutes later told you, you know, it's the rules. I'm going to follow the rules, and I want to get everything –
I want everything back to normal, and if this helps us get back to normal. So I thought that was fascinating. But I do think George Hill makes a good point. You know, why are we – we're literally – if you invented a sport that would spread COVID the best, you might come up with basketball. You might do wrestling too, but basketball also, because there's more people out there. And, you know, his idea that, you know, if it's this bad, maybe we all just close it down. So I as he talked, I was intrigued by enforcement, how the NBA plans to do the enforcement. Did the union, did the Players Association give the league the power to enforce this any way it wants? That's one of the questions I had.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that the release was the NBA and NBPA together. So they definitely agreed to it. Now, as far as the enforcement, there's obviously no way you can really enforce it, especially when they're in their home markets. You know, if George Hill's at his home or apartment in Oklahoma City, whatever his setup is, can't tell where he's going to go. Now, I would like to wish I would have got a few more into George, because his case could be interesting, because like Chris Paul, for example, his family did not live in Oklahoma City with him. He would often go back to Los Angeles to visit him. I do not know if George's family is here, but it doesn't sound like they are, just based on his comments. So I think that could be, you know, another issue where, you know, maybe take an off day to go see your family. That can't really happen anymore with these rules.
No, that's a great point. It's a very good point. I thought it was interesting. It seemed like a clear differentiation between young players and veterans.
Horford sounded a lot more like Hill. And so I totally agree. You had Diallo and SGA on one side, and then you had Horford and Hill both questioning whether or not we should be playing.
Right. So to me, that's interesting. You know, in the NBA, to me, it's a little bit of a quagmire. You know, they're apparently investigating Kyrie Irving, and they, you know, they've investigated James Harden. You don't, you know, you want everybody to do what they're supposed to, but you don't want to be big brother either, because these guys have a lot of power, these players, and you don't want to alienate them. So to me, they got to be careful on this, on the monitoring and the enforcement. They really do.
Yeah, it's like the NBA had a decision to make. Well, first they decided to play the season outside of a bubble. But now we've seen, you know, the Thunder's first game of the year got postponed because of James Harden's exploits and, you know, other Houston Rockets being out. And then there was, you know, a period of time where it was all pretty good. But after that, you've had in the last day or two, you know, emails blowing up from, you know, NBA releases about such and such game has been postponed. I think we're up to six or seven now, even some postponed one or two days in advance. Like, this is becoming a real issue. The Thunder had two positive COVID tests coming into training camp. Since then, they have not had a player miss because of COVID. So the Thunder has really been fortunate as far as this not affecting them, but they're one of the few teams in the NBA where it's not. And the NBA's response to these postponements has been to make the restrictions tighter, to tighten everything up, when another option could just be to pause the whole thing. But it doesn't seem like that is going to happen unless there's just, you know, widespread between different teams and stuff. So I don't know what the answer is, but just how do you think the NBA is – you think they're handling this the right way?
I don't know.
It all feels a little wrong to me, honestly.
Yeah.
Why are we doing
this? I'll say this. If the Players Association is involved and agreed to it willingly, then I have no problem. That's what a Players Association is for. I think the players want to play. You know, when you talk about, you know, we talked about college football this way and the NFL. And the truth is, they want, the players wanted to play. I think the NBA players want to play. So there was really no opt-out. That was never even a thing with the NBA. But it was in the NFL. It was in college. Opting out, saying, you know what? You guys go on without me. I don't want anyone to miss
it. It was in the bubble.
Right. Well, yes. You're exactly right. It was in the bubble, which is odd.
Because that was the safest place in the history of the universe.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Orlando really was the happiest place on earth there for a couple of months. But there was no really opt-out talk for this season. So, if you're George Hill and you don't want to follow the protocols, maybe you should step away. Clearly he doesn't want to. I don't know that George Hill is going to go out and run around and do crazy stuff. I just think he's a 34-year-old professional who doesn't want to be told what to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it is. There are some knuckleheads who will be involved in a variety of things. Many of them play for the Houston Rockets, but
or one place for the Brooklyn Nets.
Yes, but it'll be interesting. I think we're going to see more and more games. College football went through this. The NFL somehow didn't. They got every game played, so we'll see. I think you'll see more and more cancellations, and I think it's something we're just going to have to live with.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not trying to project, but of what George Hill was thinking. But clearly, if he didn't want to play, he wouldn't have been out there playing. But I definitely do think it is a divide between older players and younger players and guys with families and probably not wanting to go through with this whole thing. But I don't know. It's not going anywhere. It's going to be an ongoing discussion. The Thunder, their next few games look like those are all going to be in line to play, not against teams with widespread issues. But this is just going to be a strange season. And if it keeps up, I think that, not saying this will impact the Thunder in any way, but I think the standings at the end of the year could look very off depending on what players miss, chunks of time, injuries, COVID availabilities, everything like that. I just think it's going to be pretty bumpy throughout.
That's a great point. And we've been saying this is a perfect year to, if you're going to tank this year with no fans and all that. But in some ways, it's not a perfect year to tank, because even if you try to lose, sometimes you win.
You could be playing a team with eight players, yeah.
Yeah, or you go to Brooklyn and Kyrie Irving is off in, La La Land. So, different things happen. But that'll be interesting. I'd say about the 20-game mark, we'll have a better idea, what's going to exactly happen with some of these teams, whether, the Cavs are up, the Nuggets are down, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I say we give it another 3 weeks or so and see how it all shakes out.
Yeah. Well, we will be back with you tomorrow night. That will be Wednesday night. The Thunder is playing a back-to-back at home. So the Lakers are in town. They also played Tuesday night. They played at the Rockets. So both teams are coming off the second night of a back-to-back. Anthony Davis is questionable. Have no idea what availability on either side is going to look like, because some of those older guys tend to rest on the second night of a back-to-back. So we'll see how that goes. But thank you guys so much for listening, and we will be back with you to recap Thunder vs. Lakers.